They made headlines together, Timothy Wolf stepping down as president of the University of Missouri system and R. Bowen Lofton resigning as chancellor of its Columbia campus. The media reported these two events together, often attributing both of the student protests that erupted over a series of racist incidents. But in the case of Chancellor Lofton, the wheels were set in motion not by the student body and well before the first protester's tent was pitched on the Mizzou Quad. Joining me now to explain the story behind the chancellor's decision to resign is Jack Stripling. He's a senior reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education, where he covers college and university leadership. His article, How Missouri's Deans Plotted to Get Rid of Their Chancellor, was published by the Chronicle last month. And Jack, nice to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.
I should mention here that KCUR is licensed by the UM Board of Curators, but is editorially independent. Jack, how many deans were involved in this effort to have the chancellor removed?
There were nine. There,
wow.
There are a couple of interim deans that that were not involved, and one sitting dean who was not directly involved in the process. But I mean, that's the lion's share of high-level administrators at the university.
How were you able to get their stories, Jack?
It wasn't easy, actually. I felt like the deans had kind of said their piece on this. As your listeners may recall, they did send off a letter that became public the day that Dr. Lofton stepped down, or said that he was going to step down, that more or less listed their grievances to the Board of Curators and said that they wanted him to resign. And they felt they had said their piece on this, but I kind of prevailed upon them that I thought that it was really important that they speak in detail about this. You know, I write a lot about presidents and chancellors stepping down under pressure,
mm-hmm.
and usually that's kind of where it ends. And in this particular case, I felt like the story had kind of been misrepresented. I didn't feel like the truth of what had happened here had come out, and the dean seemed to respond to that.
And Chancellor Lofton himself, were you able to get his side of the story as well?
I did. We spoke at some length about some of the grievances the deans had. He was open with me, and I think we talked for about an hour and a half about all that had happened. He, of course, took issue with a lot of the assertions that the academic leaders made, but he made no bones about the fact that they really had built the coalition that forced him out.
Chancellor Lofton only came into his position in 2014. He accepted the job here in Missouri after announcing his resignation as university president at Texas A&M. What were his reasons for stepping down in Texas?
You know, that's a story that I would love to hear him tell someday. And he says he will. It was an abrupt resignation there. He said that he wanted to spend more time with students. And I guess he got that time in a space of a couple months because he was hired not long thereafter, at Missouri. He has told me on numerous occasions that he had choices. He hasn't said that he was forced out of that job, but it certainly ended very abruptly.
When did the deans at Mizzou begin to have doubts about his leadership, and what were their beefs?
You know, this started pretty early on, from my understanding. They were a little bit concerned about kind of his attention to them. Some of the deans mentioned that he seemed sort of obsessed with his cell phone. You know, when he would be in meetings, he didn't seem to be paying attention.
Huh.
And those were just sort of garden variety, personality issues.
Right.
Where it got more substantive was when he started making decisions that they felt they weren't included in. One big one was certainly a move to reduce subsidies for healthcare benefits to grad students, and the deans were really blindsided by this. And, you know, that meant a lot to them because they're trying to recruit these grad students, and that's obviously a big benefit. Where this really kind of hit the fan, though, was with the abrupt resignation of the dean of the School of Medicine, which
yeah.
the dean, you know, widely believed was Dr. Lofton's decision, and they felt blindsided by that as well. They felt that this was somebody who was doing a good job, and that's really where I think the wheels started to turn and the dean started to turn against him.
What else did they say about his management style, Jack?
Well, you know, he has a funny sense of humor. And it wasn't so funny to these deans. He would say things like, "I can fire you guys, you know this." And maybe he was saying it in jest, maybe he wasn't. I can sort of appreciate the dean's perception that even if he was joking, Is there sort of an undercurrent to a comment like that that is uncomfortable? He made a joke at the expense of the dean of agriculture on numerous occasions, according to this dean, where he would say, "Oh, here comes so and so. He's got all the money in the university." And again, I think these were personality things largely, but taken together, the dean saw this as a person who was vindictive. They saw him as somebody who was trying to undermine them in front of their own constituents, and that's really a big part of what they saw as the problem.
We're talking about the real reasons for R. Bowen Lofton's resignation as chancellor of MU's Columbia campus here just a few weeks ago. You mentioned that first major incident, this proposal to cut health care subsidies for graduate students that upset the dean so much. This struck me as something of an administrative decision. Why did the deans take exception to the proposal to the extent that they did?
I think that the issue was that, to not to get too deep in the weeds here, but there's some debate about whose decision it really was. And when I talked to Dr. Lofton, he sort of at once said, "I take ownership of this decision," but at the same time was saying, "But I didn't really think it was mine to make. I got bad advice. I certainly didn't know they were going to announce it without talking to people." So he's sort of at once owning the decision and on the other hand giving a lot of explanations for how it wasn't really his. The bottom line is that this was something that the deans were concerned about, and that even Dr. Lofton concedes they were completely blindsided by. This announcement just went out, and as far as I know, the deans didn't really know what was going to happen, and they ended up reversing the decision and sort of trying to walk it back. But by that point, there was a lot of chaos on the campus.
And the chancellor asserted to you, I think, that he didn't realize that the decision would be announced before these deans and others had been informed about it. In fact, he said, "I was absolutely stunned by that." How could that happen? He's the chancellor.
That's a great question, and so this is where leadership stories always get complicated, because you're sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, if it happened and he didn't know about it and he didn't have control of it, then that's an indictment that people can make. If he knew about it and made a bad decision, then that's another indictment. So he's sort of boxed in on that decision either way, and there doesn't seem to be an explanation that's satisfying to anyone.
If our listeners want to chime in here with a question for Jack Stripling, a senior reporter at the Chronicle of Higher Education, about all this controversy at Mizzou, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, your other major linchpin part of this decision you already mentioned was the announcement that the dean of the School of Medicine was resigning. You said the deans had a lot of respect for the job he had been doing. What was that all about? How did they react to that thing?
Well, again, I think they were blindsided by this.
Yeah.
And if deans felt uncomfortable with the chancellor's leadership and felt uncomfortable with his decision making, and saw him as someone who sort of punished his enemies, this fed into that. This was this idea that, we don't know particularly what this dean has done, but we're looking over our own shoulders because we're concerned about the chancellor's sort of approach to the job. So, I haven't gotten a satisfactory explanation as to why this happened. Dr. Lofton has been very opaque in his explanation about it. Again, in his defense, it's a personnel issue, you could legitimately say, and so perhaps he's not saying everything that he thinks about it, but at the same time, these are people who are on the same level as this med school dean who aren't sure, or at least are telling me they're not sure why this happened, and are concerned about their own jobs.
Were you able to track down this former dean, Patrice Delafontaine, if I'm saying that right, to get his version of events here?
I wasn't, and truthfully, he has declined interviews from a lot of people. Candidly, I didn't reach out to him for this story, but he has more or less stayed out of the limelight since this happened.
Okay, well, so up to this point, had the deans, either by themselves individually or as a group, gone to the chancellor with their concerns and complaints about his management style and the way he's running the ship?
Yeah, there were conversations. There were a couple. They took their grievances to the president of the university, Tim Wolf, who also resigned in this whole melee.
Yes.
And And Wolf said, he listened to these folks and he said, all right, I think you should bring these concerns to the chancellor. The chancellor then made individual phone calls to each of the deans and spoke with them. It's interesting to see how the perspectives are different here. You know, the chancellor told me, look, I spent all weekend calling every single one of these people trying to work this out. You know, I was legitimately trying to mend fences. And from the dean's perspective, they're saying, oh, he called us up on the phone. You know, he didn't really, you know, care to meet with us. He didn't want to know our opinions. So the perceptions of these events are strikingly different.
If the chancellor is calling them, how could the deans possibly say he didn't have any care about their opinions?
They saw these as highly scripted conversations. Oh. They saw him as somebody who wasn't particularly listening, was just kind of trying to present the pretense of cooperation. That's how they viewed these interactions. But really, the strangest part of the story happens a few days after all of these phone calls, where the president of the university brings in the chancellor and the provost and all these deans into one room. Some of them are teleconferenced in who couldn't be there. And basically, it's just a whipping session, from what I understand. They spend about 2 hours just chewing up the chancellor for various reasons that they have. The chancellor described it as a, quote, star chamber. He told me at one point a dean yelled at him, I don't want you in my house. Sometimes contentious world of the academy, this is behavior that that shows a level of frustration we seldom see, and any sense of decorum seems to have been set aside at that point. And so this relationship was really broken by then.
I was going to say, Jack, because you also write about how totally unaware the chancellor was of the dean's displeasure with him, and I'm wondering, how was it possible that the chancellor didn't pick up on all this?
You know, when I talked to him about it, he said to me that, I mean, what your listeners should appreciate about sort of the weird thing about the academy is there is shared governance and people of different sort of levels talk to one another and so forth, but there are also hierarchical structures. And so deans typically report to the provost. And in this particular situation, the provost was relatively new. They kind of didn't involve her, from what I understand, in this process. But to hear from the chancellor, he didn't have a ton of interaction with the deans. And he sort of made it sound as if that was not entirely his choice. I think the deans would take umbrage with that contention. But in other words, you know, he felt like he didn't have occasion to hear this. He told me that he'd only heard really one substantive complaint from a dean before all of this went down. And so he his contention is he felt sort of blindsided by this.
Again, we're visiting with Jack Stripling, a senior reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education. We're talking about the ouster of R. Bowen Lofton as chancellor of MU's Columbia campus here a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't for the reasons that for the media often seem to refer to in the wake of all the ruckus over at MU a couple of weeks back. You know, on October 23rd, just fast forwarding here a little bit, Lofton, the chancellor, meets with the president and two members of the board of curators. This was a direct conversation about the chancellor's departure. Other than the dean's complaints, were there any other reason, you know, given as to why Lofton should leave his job?
The chancellor said no. He said that he pushed and pushed for specifics, and that the people in this meeting continued to sort of steer back to the dean's concerns. So he really sees this as, you know, a soup to nuts effort on their part to do this. I mean, what is interesting though is that this is happening on such a bizarre parallel track to all of the national coverage of this race issue on the campus. I mean, by this point, Tim Wolf, the president, was absolutely in the crosshairs. I mean, he was being held up as the symbol of administrative apathy in the face of all these racial incidents on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And we're moving toward the football team's boycott and all of these things and calls for Wolf's resignation. And all the while, sort of quietly, things are already well in motion for Lofton to step aside for completely unrelated reasons.
I was going to say, just to be crystal clear here, this meeting that Lofton has with the board of curators, two members of the board, this is before the hunger strike or the football players' boycott. Do I have that right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Were the deans hearing anything from Wolf or Lofton during this time?
The only interaction that I know of between the last interaction that I know of between the deans and Lofton was this October 13th meeting, where it was just sort of this dressing down of the chancellor.
Okay. Well, because the deans weren't receiving communications from the president or the board, and because they didn't know that Lofton's fate was sealed, and because they were afraid that Wolf was going to step down and his replacement might not agree with their assignment that Lofton had to go, those nine deans wound up taking a huge gamble. What did they do?
As listeners may recall, Tim Wolf walks into the meeting on the day of his resignation, which you'll have to remind me, this is early November, and he resigns. But then there's this weird couple of hour period where
Yes.
no one is quite sure what's going to happen with Lofton, who's the head of the flagship campus. And it's during this sort of interim, as I understand it, that the deans decide to make public, or I don't know that they decided, I shouldn't say that. Someone makes public this letter that the dean sent that day to the board, explicitly calling for the resignation of the chancellor or the removal of the chancellor. And this really is effectively a Hail Mary. I mean, now they've outed themselves as the people who are sort of orchestrating this behind the scenes. And it is a high-risk maneuver because if Lofton hadn't resigned, it's really hard to see how any or many of them could have stayed on. They've basically come clean that they've been trying to fire their boss for a number of weeks. And so it was a high-risk maneuver, but I think that their concern was that, they had kind of been working with President Wolf to help reach this conclusion. And if Wolf stepped aside and someone else came in, then the opportunity might have been lost.
Do we have any idea who leaked this letter?
I don't.
Is that what wound up kicking off your interest in the story, Jack?
It is. And, I mean, I think that on one hand, our account is a lot more detailed than what had been out there. But, it didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that, wow, if nine deans wrote this letter, there's probably more to this story. And, there had been some suggestion by another news outlet, that there might be more to this story, and it's more about administrative missteps, and we were working that angle ourselves at the time. I do think, again, I mean, the message that I tried to convey to these people in academic leadership was that if you're going to take action like this, which is not terribly common as a collective action for deans to take, that it's important to take ownership of that and to tell people what happened. We do have a tendency for people to kind of burn out for reasons we don't fully understand, and then they end up running another university, and history has a way of repeating itself.
Well, speaking of that, Lofton's resignation as chancellor here sort of mirrored his resignation as president of Texas A&M, leaving the higher post but remaining on faculty is what happened there and what's going to happen here as well in Missouri. You say he sees a return to Texas in his future. Why doesn't he just go there now?
Well,
I mean,
I mean,
given all this.
I'm sure that he would say that he has work left to do at Mizzou and that he's been asked to do this. I have to take him his word on that.
Lofton finally says he hasn't told the whole story from his own viewpoint. Any idea when he's going to go about doing that, Jack?
I mean, he claims he's going to head back to some ranch in Texas, I guess, and crank out this tell-all. I can't wait to read it.
And any idea what the timetable is for that?
Oh, he wasn't very specific.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jack Stripling, again, senior reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education, where he covers college and university leadership. His article, How Missouri's Deans Plotted to Get Rid of Their Chancellor, was published by the Chronicle just last month. Jack, I sure appreciate you taking a couple of minutes. Thanks very much.